You want Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's gets it. We checked the calendar, and Christmas is coming early. $99 is all you need to grab your favorite select 7-foot pre-lit artificial Christmas tree for the holiday season. And don't sweat what gifts to get Dad, because we've got up to 40% off select tools and accessories. That's how Lowe's celebrates Black Friday early. Selection varies by location. While supplies last.
John Batchelor, this is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network. It's a pleasure to welcome Bill Harwood, Space News for CBS. He is at the Kennedy Space Center to celebrate the arrival of a moon ship here in the 21st century. Michael Collins has left us, but he's left behind a rich legacy, and we're here to tell the story of Michael Collins and what's arrived at the Kennedy Space Center to celebrate. October 31st, 1930, April 28th, 2021. Bill, your moving recital of Michael Collins alone in Apollo 11, tell the story of how he regarded not being able to go to the surface of the moon. Good evening to you.
And good evening to you, John. You know, he was asked that repeatedly over the years. Did you regret being the one guy on Apollo 11 who didn't get to go to the moon, or go down to the surface, I should say? And he always said, and I absolutely believed him, he did not regret it. He said, it's not that I'm unhappy about the seat I had. It's thankful that I had the seat that I had, that I was able to participate in this, you know, tremendously exciting program and to be on the crew of the first flight to another world, if you think about it like that. So, no, he was very satisfied with his role. Obviously, he was the guy that was there to get them and bring them back to Earth when the moon landing part of the mission was over. And he treasured his role in it.
The scary moment. I thought it was Armstrong landing when he kept moving and moving and looking for something without a boulder. I thought that was it. And they were down to what? Less than a minute of fuel. Who knows? The estimate. But Michael Collins tells the story of a much scarier moment I had never heard before. He started talking. What was that moment in the, what he calls the daisy chain of small events?
Well, it was just, you know, when you asked Michael Collins about what worried him the most on that mission, and this is no great secret, he said it was all of the things that had to happen right for the mission to be a success. Any one small failure could have derailed that flight, and if not killed them, at least brought the mission to an end before they could land on the moon. And the thing he said he worried the most about of all of those things that could go wrong was the lunar module's ascent engine. You know, it was a single engine. It simply had to work, or Armstrong and Aldrin would not get off the moon. Now, if you think about the landing when they're coming down, it's true they had a single descent engine in the descent stage of the lunar module, but they could have aborted the landing, fired up their ascent engine, and gotten back in orbit if there'd been an emergency. But for takeoff, that single engine simply had to work. And he talked about, Collins talked about his thoughts about that. And if something like that happened, you know, he'd be forced to come home alone. And that would be a lonely spot in history for a person. But again, he had confidence in the system. And at the end of the day, everything worked like a dream.
His life bridges the U.S. progress from war fighting to space exploring. He was a fighter pilot. He'd graduated the military academy. And yet there he was in Apollo 11. Here we are more than 50 years later, much more than 50 years later. And now I come to the payoff. Arriving at the Kennedy Space Center is a booster. What booster, Bill?
Well, it's the core stage of the Space Launch System rocket. This is the gargantuan rocket that NASA is building to carry astronauts back to the moon as part of its Artemis program. The solid rocket boosters that'll strap to the side of this rocket are already here. They've been stacked. They're in the big vehicle assembly building a few hundred yards from where I'm sitting. And the core stage, the giant first stage, it's powered by four repurposed engines left over from the space shuttle. That rocket showed up, this week, and they're going to put it in the vehicle assembly building, attach it to those two boosters and get that rocket ready for a launch late this year. It's a huge milestone for NASA. It's the first new moon rocket, if you will, to be built since the legendary Saturn V back in the 60s.
As I understand it, and I read through the program, the SLS is to carry the next moon mission, the U.S. returning to the moon, to the lunar orbit, to the way station, the cislunar orbit, and then another craft, I believe the lander to be built by SpaceX, this is all theoretical right now, but the award was just made, is to carry to the surface. Do I have the stages right, Bill?
That's basically right. They're planning to launch an Orion capsule. The astronauts will be in an Orion capsule. That's been built. It's a project of Lockheed Martin. The Space Launch System rocket will propel the Orion capsule to lunar orbit, where it will either dock with the interim space station you alluded to. It's called Gateway. Or it could go directly and dock with the SpaceX lunar lander. And from there, the astronauts go down to the surface. They're talking about spending about a week on the surface. And they would blast off, come back up, rendezvous with the Orion or the Gateway, either way, transfer back into the Orion capsule and come back to Earth, much like the Apollo astronauts did. But the point of Artemis is to develop the infrastructure, the rockets, and the technology to have long-term exploration of the moon, a sustained presence on the moon, unlike the, you know, grab, get some rocks, and come home missions of Apollo. It's more of a sustained program, they hope, that if all goes well, they could launch the first astronauts by the end of 2024 or shortly thereafter.
And when you say sustained, we're talking about a colony that would be necessarily underground for a while or on the surface?
No, not necessarily a colony. I'm talking about sustained, you know, weeks-long missions, multiple missions that would go to the same place and try to do the same sorts of things over a long period. You know, they want to land near the South Pole. There are permanently shadowed craters around the South Pole where data from orbiters indicates there is ice presence. And if you've got ice, you know, you could take that apart. You could turn it into hydrogen and oxygen. You got rocket fuel, air, water. You could sort of live off the land, if you will. And they view this as a stepping stone, both technology-wise for eventual flights to Mars and also just to prove, you know, human habitability and all the things you have to do to make that flight to Mars down the road. So it's quite an ambitious program.
1969, the summer of 1969, I was at the university and we all watched the moon landing together over many hours. There was a drama, though, that was not on the television, and it was the Cold War. It was a race between Roscosmos, the Russian space program, and NASA, the American space program, and it was all wrapped up into nuclear threat and the Vietnam War and bad acting by the Soviets around the world. That is no longer with us, but there is something of a race, Bill, isn't there? Because the Chinese and the Russians have just signed a memo of understanding that they're going to the moon for the first time to that very same South Pole. Does that inform NASA these days that there's the excitement of a mini moon race?
Well, they claim no. I mean, the point is that America won that race. Apollo astronauts, you know, six missions went to the surface of the moon, and that's a been there, done that kind of a thing. What NASA wants to do is have a more, not a permanent presence, but a semi-permanent presence, a sustained presence on the moon to develop the technology and techniques you need to eventually go to Mars. They have invited the international community to go along. The Europeans have agreed, the Japanese. As you say, Russia and China have decided to go their own path. But I don't think NASA views that as a race per se. Now, that could change, John. I mean, you know, if Chinese get to the moon before NASA gets back to the moon, I'm sure there will be, you know, calls in Washington, you know, how did that happen or what should we do about that, if anything. But I don't think NASA views it as a race. I think they view it as the next logical step on the road to Mars, and whether China gets back to the moon before NASA does, I don't think they view that as significant.
SLS, you introduce it by saying it's going through testing before it's man-rated. I think that's the talk. So what do we look for this year? What is there anything to worry about the way Collins worried about the single ascent engine?
Well, first of all, the SLS is a giant rocket. It will be the most powerful rocket ever built when it flies. And that includes the Saturn V, which still holds that title today. You know, they're planning two initial flights. One is unpiloted. They hope to launch that in the November-December timeframe of this year. The plan is to send an Orion capsule with nobody in it but lots of instrumentation on a long looping trip out beyond the moon, be the farthest, you know, any human-rated vehicle has ever flown. And then back again, and if that goes well, they want to launch the second SLS with astronauts on board. and kind of repeat that mission, send them on a flight out beyond the moon, possibly to orbit the moon. And then the third flight, which it's anybody's guess when that might happen, but it could happen in theory, they say, in 2024, you would send what NASA says will be the next man and the first woman down to the surface of the moon. Now, you used the word theoretical a minute ago describing that flight, and it kind of is. You know, SpaceX is building a lander, but they're a long way from having an operational vehicle. The SLS is much closer to flying, and if all goes well, it will fly this year.
Bill Harwood, CBS Space News. I'm John Batchelor, CBS Audio Network.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.
If you're an RIA or looking to become one, Schwab Advisor Services is the Watson to your homes. Smart, dependable, always has your back. It's no mystery why they're the number one choice for RIAs who want to be the ultimate solution for their clients. With all the wealth services, technology, and support your firm needs, the difference is so obvious, it's Schwabvious. Follow the clues at schwabvious.com. A t-shirt and jeans, mac and cheese. Some things in life are an obvious match, like RIAs and Schwab Advisor Services, the number one choice for independent advisors. The difference is so obvious, it's Schwabvious. Learn why at schwabvious.com.